There goes our family friendly rating. Thanks, Adam.
Spike scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Beyond the Bell of Souls podcast. I'm joined by Red Powell.
Hello.
Tanya Gates and Adam Camilleri.
Hey, everybody.
No, hey there.
I did some hobby stuff this afternoon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I magnetized some arms on some war dogs.
Ooh.
Nice. I'm gonna pick your brain possibly in a finishing segment about the best ways to go about painting some of these big chunk of knights, because I'm gonna start that journey I was meant to start on. I've got about 20 Dark Angels infantry to do, and then I think I'm closing the door until Heresy 2.0 is fully launched, and I'll just do some bits and pieces to get up to a decent force there, and then I think I am finally freaking done with this 3 years of Dark Angels.
Well, you got to get top Dark Angel in the ITC, man.
That's right, baby. That's it. That's it. Got to do it.
Are you building models towards that right now, or is this just like a vanity project?
When I finish the next 20 dudes I've got 10 Cataphracti Termies, which are going to play a tweener between my Heresy and my 40k army, is Relic Termies or Cataphracti Termies. And then I'm doing 10 Hellblasters, and then that's all the 40k done. I've got like all the Outriders, Eliminators, Inceptors, Intercessors. I've got everything I'll ever need, essentially, done. I'll have 6,000 points of painted Dark Angels. I can play whatever. And then, yeah, I think I just need to stop. I haven't painted anything else except that scheme in almost 3 years. Just that black with, like, red stripe and, yeah, it's wearing me down, boys and ladies.
I just can't even imagine painting the exact same thing for 3 years. I would probably go a little bit loopy.
That's what Marine players do.
Yeah, man. And it hurts as well that I went from painting Black Templars for a year before I went into Dark Angels. So I literally have been painting Black Marines for 4 years.
So you have a good Black recipe is what you're saying.
I do. I actually have a couple of good Black recipes.
Yeah, maybe we make the section two of this just about hobby stuff. Big models and then, painting black and stuff. But these magnets, I've ordered a bunch of wrong magnets in the past. So I just have a collection of magnets, and I found some that are the exact diameter of the casing around the knight, the carnivores and stuff. They come with the ways to make the shooting knights or the close combat knights. So you have arms that you can magnetize.
Is it funny that when you said wrong magnets, I just imagined you with like metal discs that didn't stick together, and you're like, these magnets are wrong and they don't
how do they work?
They don't magnetize at all. They're wrong magnets.
But I have these little magnet drums that really fit down in the well of the arms, where the weapons go, and then I just trimmed off the part that would have been the cylinder insert that lets the arm swivel, and glued a magnet to that, a thinner magnet, and
brilliant.
There you go.
So, that's one of the cool things about that I think the Chaos Knights have going from over the regular Armagers, so the War Dogs over the Armagers. You just get so many more variants, right? Because you got the Carnivore, you got the Brigand, you've got the other dude and Bumbly Joe. There's like five or six different variants.
There are. There are the Huntsman, the Executioner, the whatever.
Yeah, those dudes.
Yeah.
quality content, people.
Bumbly Joe. Yep, you heard it here first.
Yep.
New knight variant, Bumbly Joe.
That's right.
No, but to be real, the Abominant, they just showed in the previews, not the Chaos Knight coming in the box set with the book and everything, which is an awesome little combo deal, but the Chaos Knight as it is now is going to have like all the other, pretty sure all three Chaos Knight variants can be gotten in that one box set, which looks pretty good too.
That's awesome.
Anyone playing along at home, it is the Executioner, the Stalker, the Carnivore, the Brigand, and the Huntsman.
I knew there was five, right?
And the Bumbly Joe.
From the awful, awful house, not to be confused with the International House of Pancakes.
I expect FTN Instagram to have like hashtag Bumbly Joe, people sending in their randomly painted.
No, I think Bumbly Joe dies with you, Adam.
And I do love the Waffle House. I don't want any misconceptions about this segment.
They will take up this flag, Red. You know they will.
No.
One of us is wrong, one of us is right. Show us what's up next week.
I've got some pretty good inclinations on how many people are going to say Bumbly Joe.
So with the actually the it was the autocannon knights are the ones that I set their arms up to swap
between the the melee knights and the
Melee knights I just built as is, but I used I magnetized up the what is the executioner but the Helverin to be the brigand, which is the autocannon, like the assault cannon and the multi melter. So that's the
I love that chain cannon, man. I do rate. I think it's a really good profile.
We'll see.
I like the Helverin build, the executioner better personally.
Yeah. I'm more of a fan of that too. But look, I mean, this is early days with the Codex, and you know, people are gonna be trying to find, you know, they'll find that right, sweet weapon profile. But I like the flat three damage and just not looking back.
Mm.
But you know, we'll see. Whatever. They're magnetized now, so they can be actually the reason I went that way was less for the chain cannon and more for maybe just more multi-meltas and something that I could maybe conceivably feel okay leaving in the backfield or further back than running up.
I made a big call at the start of 9th edition that G-Dub was changing the goalposts. 8th edition was very much a thunder hammer and melted and plasma gun edition, as in if you could find anything around about that's profile, it was worth taking. And then I made a big call that 9th edition seemed to be the more lightning claw melter gun edition.
Mm-hmm.
Do you reckon that's held up? Because multi melters just seem to be the thing to take if you can take in just about every army, from sisters to knights to if you got power armor, cool, multi melter, you can probably take some. Even a lot of the orc weapons like echo what a multi melter does. A lot of the Wazbomb blaster jets and stuff of that ilk. Do you reckon that statement's held up?
Lightning claws, absolutely. I don't think melters ever went anywhere. I guess lightning claws dipped for a bit, and then people are like, oh crap, lightning claws are like really good.
Yeah.
And now they're even better.
I think with eradicators, I mean, I know it's not what everybody's taking, but I think that melters have kind of been on the menu for a while. I will agree they kind of slipped off as the need for them went away, but I do think they were pretty hot still.
Is there any parallels to that statement in AOS, Daniel? Like, is there any just like, this is the right strength, like the right hit and wound and rend that everybody should want to have?
I'm not 100% sure. Like, so instead of AP, we have rend, which is the exact same thing. And high rend is not something that is common. So in general, if you see something that's like rend 2 or rend 3, you probably want to take that in your list because
even rend 1 is special still.
Yeah. Like, and also, like, when we're talking about horde armies, we're really talking about horde armies, right? Like you can have giant units, 30 models in a unit. Like that's not going to have the most spectacular stat line on its weapon, right? But it's just you're have a sheer weight of dice. That's what you're going for. So I think it really depends. Every faction plays extremely different. It just in my experience, probably rend and multi-damage. But no, there's not really any particular, like, this is like one profile that sort of exists across all of the factions. They all play pretty differently.
That's good to know. That's interesting. It's also the average armor save in 40K is a 3+. Like that is the average, the most common one you'll see. The most common ones are usually like a 5+ in AOS, or what it was a couple of years ago when I was still playing it, where the average was a 5+. Is that still holding true, or is it more 4+ and 3+ than I'm remembering?
I think 3+ are still uncommon. Like, you're really only going to see that on things that have shields. Maybe Stormcast has more of that, but most other factions, like, that's going to be exclusively on, like, your heroes, like your generals. Yeah. Or there's like a few odd things that have shields that might get you there. 4, I think, is more common than it used to be in 2nd. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's most of your troops are going to be 5 or 6+.
It's interesting because when you have a worse save, you start prioritizing like wounds per point over toughness per point. Which I think is what a lot of 40K has gotten to at the moment, with how durable things have kind of slung back to with Armor of Contempt coming into the game, and things like shield drones and custodies and stuff. You look at what's the efficiency on how tough I can make a single wound of an army. Whereas I remember in fantasy, especially in 8th edition, before the switch over to AOS, there was a lot of how many points per wound can I get? Like, how many just like Skaven slaves were everywhere, big hordes of zombies, stuff like that, because it was just a really efficient point per wound that you could just keep stubborn all game.
Well, if you can't do that, I mean, competitive 40K swings back to durability, you know, is
yes.
What's up. I mean, how do you...
Yeah.
And it may not mean certainly the toughness of the unit, but... the bodyguard, like, how do I make this thing that I want to exist stay on the table longer? Because we still do play a very lethal game. It is, it's a little bit less lethal now than I think it was in the early stages of the edition. And maybe that just took, you know, time for us to evolve towards. But I think we've gotten, like, as a community, we decided to be smarter about terrain, understanding, you know, model placement, lanes of fire, terrain rules, and then taking advantage of our codex.
Exactly. Codexes. Right. And now, like, still, like, just about everything that's in line of sight can be killed by your opponent most of the time. But we have these outlier units now that are just like, hey, how much time, how many turns, and how much fire do you have? Because I bet you I can probably take it. Things like Deathwing Knights. Now, Paladins. Growing up Paladins, T-Sun's Scarab Occult Terminators, they're starting to hit this level of durability that bounces that question back. Because it used to be like, oh, can your opponent kill you? And the answer was pretty much always yes.
Yeah, always yes, they could.
Pretty
yes.
much always, yeah, yeah. Whereas now it is like, if I'm in cover, if I have this buff, maybe they can't.
If you're coming to join us at events like this or watching events, that's what you'll see people doing time and time again. And that's what I think people should be looking for in their codex. So you ask, you know, is Melta and Lightning Claw where it's at? I think absolutely, because they solve for that.
Mm.
You know, with the Melta, it punches harder. And when you get through, if you're in close range, which, you know, it's not difficult to get in close range. If you make it your mission to do so, the wounds, the hits that you get through count more. For more.
And I think the perfect example of what I'm saying is we saw a very strong showing from a Sisters army in a large event just the weekend gone. And I think we've all known that Sisters has a very good, very strong codex that's really exciting, very deep. And then they got this lift out of the change with Armor of Contempt, the addition into the game, and we've all just been kind of sitting here waiting for them to kind of take a big scalp or go out and show the quality. And yeah, it finally happened on the weekend, didn't it?
It did. It's a skill-intensive list, just
extremely
codex as well. Like, it's you're not playing hobby-wise or game-wise on easy mode. I don't think in any aspect of this.
But when you do the cross comparison to the other armies that have a similar, you know, Ilk, another power armor army, let's say generic Ultramarines or whatever, you tend to have around about the same firepower, a little bit better melee, because I do think that there is something to say for. Bloody Rose Repentia just being an X-Factor thing that Space Marines don't really have an equivalent for. And then you have just like 3 to 4 more units than an equivalent Power Armor army by dint of being just about a third cheaper. And then you just add in like a good generalship and Miracle Dice and you can just make magic happen.
Yeah. It's cool. Look, maybe we'll get some insight over the course of this week for the various shows about how that army came about doing it. But, you know, we've often mentioned that the Sisters have the capacity, the capability of doing that. And winning out in what we know is an area with some pretty stiff competition. That's pretty cool. Give some hope to some Adeptus Sororitas players out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think the Bloody Rose, is that the Sisterhood that was used? Is that?
I do believe so. I actually don't know for a fact. You guys pointed this out to me in the pre-show, and I haven't had a chance to look it up yet. Bloody Rose would be my go-to if I had the choice. I think that the speed, the explosiveness, the jank from the fact they have a scout move now as well, and that they can spike their damage on sixes to wound in combat.
Out of the supplement you're talking about.
Out of the Bloody Rose supplement. Yeah, it rounds them out to be a lot more than just the angry Sisters. What do they call there? What is Bloody Rose chapter? What's their chapter word?
The chapter word.
What's their chapter word?
I'm going to tell you.
Order.
It is an order.
Bloody Rose.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
What are you talking about? Chapter word.
I'm really worried about you, Adam.
Adam Word, good. What do you mean? yeah, but yeah.
Like, I'm glad we found it before we said something really stupid.
Because you're all at default, like you have bolters, you have multi-melters, heavy flamers, you know, all these good weapons on demand that hit on threes already. All you need to do to add that army is some decent melee and it becomes a much more well-rounded thing. I think, Paul, you say this all the time, like Novok for Necrons and a bunch of other examples. If you just take what is a good shooting list and add the chapter, the order, the dynasty that makes you more well-rounded, that's always going to be a good place to start, right?
Yeah, yeah. It gets you through a couple of take-all-comers, like where you need just to be like, I just need to hang on a little bit.
And the hot segue, unlike what World Eaters can do.
Well, these, you know, the Tyranids, yeah, they lost some games over this weekend. Have we caught up, you know?
Yeah, I think we may have. At least people have finally gotten to a combination of units and choices and tech pieces and warlord traits that close the gap. Yeah, that closed the gap. Yeah, exactly. In FAQs, that closed the gap as much as they can. That Tyranid FAQ taking away the ability for them to have, you know, overrun and the whatever the leave the board option was, so that they had, you know, they could send out two...
Circle the prey.
Yeah, two good melee or shooting assets, drop some bombs, kill some of your best stuff, and then leave. That was toxic, unfortunately. But surprisingly enough, Eldar still do the same thing, like Craftwood Eldar. Essentially do the same thing, but from the back of the board.
I don't want to put them on the radar, man.
They're in the firing line.
I like where Craftworlds are at right now.
Well, I played Craftworlds at an event recently. I played as them, funnily enough. I think I told you about it last week.
Yep.
But every turn, I would use 10... the only things I would know that I could use every turn was my unit of 9 Windriders, which I always allocated CP to Fire and Fade or Auto Battle Focus.
To shoot and then get out of line, like make it to where your opponent could not retaliate on you.
Exactly. Essentially, they're like pseudo no line of sight shooting. They're not quite artillery because they can't shoot things that they can't see, but the fact is they move 16 inches. So they can usually get an angle on something they want to see and then be untargetable if you position appropriately. And the same thing for Swooping Hawks. Every turn a Swooping Hawk unit moves 14 inches, can advance with no penalties because of battle focus, and then shoot something and then boost back to where they started. And so you've just got these two really good assets that you don't really get to any reprisal against. So I'm hoping that some similar complaints are leveled against them now because they do a lot of the same things that we complained about and had issue with Nids doing.
Yeah, but they're not doing it with a Hive Tyrant. They're doing it with much toughest models.
That's the thing. The Hive Tyrant jumps your lines, flies past the terrain, then declares a charge, eats your favorite thing and leaves. That's the issue there. Because usually what the Shurikens and the Swooping Hawks and stuff are doing, they're killing your screen. They're killing your objective holders. They're putting pressure on your scoring ability. Whereas the Flyer and the Harpies by default are just going to go and kill. Oh, what's the thing you need to actually win this game? Yeah, what's your Eradicators? The thing that you need to heavy lift this game? Bang, dead turn one. See, you can't do anything about it.
I think it was something very difficult for people to.
Sorry, did you mention World Eaters, Adam?
No, I didn't. Never heard of him. They're not a legend. They don't have a book. So don't worry. You go back to
sleep. Sorry, Paul. Just woke up from whatever ramble Adam thought I heard him mention something about Bull Eaters.
Yeah, it was a couple of months ago when we thought they might be getting a book.
Hey, y'all, we're going to be talking about the Heresy pretty soon. So
I don't think it's Heresy. I think it's White.
No, yeah. Well, we know they're coming. They told us. I mean, they teased us with them being released sometime soon in the open day. I wish I just want to see a new Zerker. I want to know what a new Zerker looks like.
I mean, I'm cool with the Zerkers I have. Don't get me wrong. I'll take a new one. Plus the mixing in the folks from Necromunda, the Corpse Grinder cults. I mean, just tons of
those are good.
Amazing opportunities.
I don't want to speculate. We're going to have plenty to talk about, and we definitely will be talking about, let's just say, some Heresy, hopefully pretty soon. Because that kit is massive.
Oh, yeah. The box. Who's getting it?
Talk about some sweet. They're going to get the Blood Angel treatment ASAP.
Yeah. Have you touched on? Oh, sorry, Red. Have you played Heresy? Like
absolutely.
World
I have a full Iron Warriors army.
Nice. Would you do World Eaters?
Nope. No. Unless like they gave a more. Maybe like the World Eaters, once they've fallen, like, you know, they kind of do some of the timeline stuff where we've seen the slow but surely progressive release of the fallen Emperor's Children, for example, right? Like
I hope we do see that. And I think that's a great excuse to re-release, you know, Primarch models after.
Yeah, exactly. I will go into World Eaters when they have the fallen version. Don't get me wrong. I do like their whole white and blue thing they've got going on, but I'm a big fan of the Iron Warriors and in the Heresy and everything they have going on. I'm pretty excited about that. I mean, I've got a Mastodon. I've got fire raptors. I've got a full like armor complement along with Perturabo and his Iron Circle and everything. And so sweet. I've got a lot going on with Horus Heresy. I just haven't had as much, nearly enough of opportunity to play that one.
Perturabo is a challenging model to get looking good.
He's, you know, he's not extremely dynamic necessarily.
Parts. I mean, it's a great looking model. I mean, just the color scheme that is there, I think is a lot more challenging than
it is, because you can't just paint him metal and then be done with it, right? Like he's actually got some surprising detail to him. I'm really pleased with the model nonetheless, and it stands out well amongst everything else going on. But I agree, Paul. It's definitely, some people might look at it and just be like, yeah, just start with metal and go from there. But I think there's a lot more going on than just that.
I also think he has the best display base of all the Primarchs.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's just perched upon half a knight. Like, yeah, it's hanging out on top of a knight.
Oh, you can't go wrong with the character. I know we segue from talking about Tyranids, and we'll get back to that in just a second. You cannot go wrong with any of the character series. And look, you know, we gave this advice a couple weeks ago, but if there's a character you're looking for a Legion and it's available, I'd highly suggest you grab it if you can, if you're interested in doing it, because I think it's going to be a popular set and there's going to be a lot of people trying to scramble to get that stuff for their Legions.
I may or may not be trying to figure out a scheme that I could paint Alpha Legion really fast.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, if you figure out how to get that sheen, people will want to hear that.
Well, so I slap chopped a marine, but instead of using gray and white paint, I used like a gunmetal gray and a really bright silver, and then I put a Liquitex ink on top. That's like that sort of turquoisey color, and like I'm shook. It looks pretty good. I did try contrast, but it was like a bit tea stainy. So yeah, I think I'm gonna do this, and then I'll edge highlight it because I have like a white metallic. I'll edge highlight it and do a little trim, and then I think that'll be good to go. It'll be like less than an hour a model, which is amazing for me.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to see that. That sounds cool.
Yeah, me too.
But the only thing that like stops me from wanting to sort of jump into Horus Heresy is like the few times that I've shared Marines that I've painted, because I did buy like the Kalth box set. I just sort of got chewed up for like,
you mentioned this,
the iconography, right? And so like I want to play Alpha Legion, but like where do I find what the iconography is supposed to look like so I don't get like chewed up and spit out on the internet?
Number one, they're your models and you got to live with them, so paint them however you want. There are, but secondly, if that is something that you actually want to do, there are decal sheets, and I think they're still available.
Well, I was going to say, even if you don't, the decal sheet's a great place to go to for inspiration.
Yeah.
If you want to just get an idea of what their Legion symbols usually are, there's like a bunch of different ones of them. Like you'll get your generic, you know, Hydra symbols. You get stuff big enough to slap on the side of tanks or on banners. You'll get a good sense of what they're supposed to be.
These decals, for anybody who's curious, are very quality too. Like they seem to be like slightly thicker transfer, like easier to use transfer paper type stuff.
But like, how do I know what goes where? Like, where is like the rules of iconography? You know?
Oh, like which symbol goes on which heavy, like support choice?
We've seen some previews of material as it's coming out, but I can tell you the older books, like the Age of Darkness books that specifically focused on, I think we talked about it back when they were releasing stuff for the Thrawmas Crusade in regards to the Dark Angels, because that was a massive lore dump of Horus Heresy Dark Angel material, and it was reconfirming a lot of what we had previously. But in all of those books where it was specific to the Legions, you can see a ton of iconography in regards of how they're marked and different, whether it's chapters or companies or whatever, that were all throughout their different organizations. It really breaks them down and shows even over time how their paint schemes changed. I mean, some of the more drastic ones like World Eaters, as we mentioned, or even Word Bearers, going from like ash gray to, you know, dark red kind of deal, versus how Imperial Fists and Iron Warriors adjusted over time,
you know, the Imperial Fist, there's like entire groups of them that were black, and that kind of lends itself to some of the Black Templar later down the road and so on and so forth. But for the Alpha Legion, there's a ton of material out there. I can say that having seen a lot of it from my brother's a big fan of the Alpha Legion. So it's definitely out there in some of those older books. And I imagine they're going to redo it with some of the newer material, I'm sure.
You could even just go to Google and type in Alpha Legion Black Book artwork, and it'll come up with actual pictures of Alpha Legion, and it'll have little things saying this is brother such and such from chapter such and such, and it'll show you like the iconography for that chapter will be, you know, left knee, right shoulder pad, or van brace or whatever, and it'll give you some configuration of their markings. But at the end of the day, do whatever looks good. They're your models. Like, as long as, yeah, just do whatever. Like, it's up to you. But if you want to go strictly by the Black Book fluff, there is opportunities if you want.
There was a symbol on the decal sheet, these crossed axes. And I'm like, what choice does this go on? I just decided it was heavy support. I don't know if that's true. But that's on the Sons of Horus or Luna Wolves decal sheet.
But yeah, if you come up with a good, like, that perfect aqua blue sheen, metallic, whatever it is, I think... like the people will scramble for that. Like everyone wants their Heresy scheme to be the best, the primo. Because that's if everybody's painting Alpha Legion the same, everyone wants to have the most accurate, the most beautiful base color. Because the base color is literally is it. It's so funny that like in Heresy, the schemes get narrowed. In as far as like, okay, you're painting one of the legions or one of the Solar Auxilia or whatever. So there's only three or four versions of that scheme within that chapter. Like I'm painting Dark Angels. I can paint them as during the Unification Wars as the Black Princes before they're even called the Dark Angels. As if they're literally just black and gunmetal. That was their only scheme. That was it. That was before they had the Primarch. Before the other Primarchs were even discovered. Like I can paint them as that. I can paint them as Calibanites, as in the traitors. With Luther on Caliban, or I can paint them as the lads with the lion during Thramis and all that stuff. And so I have three different ways that I can do it. But between those three things, I can really kind of set my own tone. Like for my Calibanites, yeah, I've decided to put a red stripe down the middle of their heads and then a red stripe down their right van brace, their right knee. And then I'm going to do one shoulder pad as a green just to denote that. And bang, all of a sudden I've got my unique thing inside that because that's how I choose to represent that faction, that part of the storyline, the narrative.
Yeah, and also if you can find something to be done quickly, I'm sure people will like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. If you want quick, Red, how did you do your Iron Warriors? Because whilst they're the quickest to get up to par, then you can just spend as long as you want getting perfect hazard stripes and weathering and yeah.
Yeah, so I think I've mentioned this before, just because the hazard stripes thing is a thing. And so that I could not get locked in with some of the hazard stripes material, I may have mentioned this, and it's okay. I'll take a little bit of shock value here. I actually start by priming my models in yellow.
Oh, I don't know if you have mentioned this.
Well, that is a heretical, so it's pretty apt for the Heresy.
It's kind of funny, right? And so, yeah, I mean, you know, Iron Warriors, Imperial Fist, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, so I prime it in yellow, and then I go through and paint. I tape over the hazard stripes on that yellow wherever I want. So like a shoulder, a knee pad, whatever, that kind of deal. And then I paint the rest of the model. I put the metal on as base. I block in the black wherever else I want. And that's how I go. And that allows me to essentially start with the yellow like as a solid color without having to worry about trying to paint yellow on top of everything else. And I just leave that tape on until I'm done with the rest of the model. I pull the tape off and boom, hazard stripes.
Oh, I mean, can't argue with that.
It took a little bit and a buddy of mine recommended it a while ago. And it's been my go-to method for... this is mostly infantry models. I don't do that for... I'll block off and paint like large panels of the vehicles with hazard stripes just by blocking them off. I won't prime the entire vehicle in yellow.
Have you tried to contrast or speed paint a Marine as Alpha Legion? Or have you thought about that?
So yesterday on stream, I actually used contrast and Liquitex ink to do the same thing. And the result is very similar. I just really like the look of like a Nuln oil wash and then the Liquitex ink on top. It just looks a little bit like velvety smooth, but they look extremely similar. And I was really just being nitpicky.
Mm. Because I suppose that is the big change for everybody jumping into Heresy now. There's just more technique out there for getting the result. There's just like it's a whole new third of your ability to get the end result you want. I mean, have you painted Blood Angels with contrast yet, Paul? How's that gone for you, if you have? So,
no, I mean, I have a red recipe that I can never change for the rest of my life.
That's exactly how I feel about my Dark Angels. I started my Dark Angels before contrast came out, and now I can't not. Because what if they don't look the right, like I rank them up and they're with the other boys and the one squad looks different from the other one? I'll never be able to live with it.
I mean, I use contrast. Like, I'll use it just like any other paint. You just put it as a, you know, something in the arsenal. Like with the knights that I recently did, I painted the buzzards, the terror shades on the knights with contrast.
I do like they come with the buzzards. That's a nice touch.
Creepy aesthetic to it. But yeah, that, you know, I find it's easier for me to use contrast when something has like a lot of detail on it and less smooth armor plates. So I don't know that I would use them for my Marines, even if I could use them, which I cannot for my Marines.
Fair.
Because I have so many Blood Angels with a certain recipe, and then everything must match, or I have to start the whole army over again.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how I feel. Sorry.
Look, we're over time for this segment, but that was actually a cool break, I think, because yeah, the game state I don't want to say it's not back to even where like everybody has like, you know, the same shot at winning every single game, depending on mission or your army list selection or whatever. There's all these options that people can take, and some of them are choices just because they want to take, and some are, you know, seemingly out of the control. But the tournaments that we're using, the most recent FAQs, seem to have kind of different outcomes at the top of the heap than we've seen in the last like couple of weeks. And I think that is interesting and indicative of a pretty healthy environment.
It's undoubtedly it is healthier now than it has been. I mean, if
healthier, think, that may be a better way to describe it.
Well, I don't want to, you know, be wrong, but I'm willing to say
it's okay to be wrong, Adam.
It is. I'm constantly reminded upon by members of this lovely panel. By members, I mean red. And Chapter Approved is coming. We know it's a mid-year thing. They're going to be doing a points rebalance. I think most of what's wrong with the game now, or most of the imbalances with the game, can be fixed with points. Tyranids, there's a couple of their medium bugs, and the Maliceptor, I think, could get adjustments points-wise. That would go a long way to leveling any and all playing fields. And we could see a bit of a golden age for 9th edition, as we did for 8th edition.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, I got a lot of folks get a lot of questions, you know, we mentioned it, because we're, you know, kind of endorsing folks getting out and playing in tournaments if it's right for them. Definitely want people to know what in for if they choose to do that. And certainly a lot of things go into making that choice. But the one thing I'm continually impressed with the game and the rules staff is that they are always got their mind on the enjoyability of the edition, and that we're kind of seeing that play out by at least a larger sections of list being able to consistently put up a series of wins.
Yeah, I think it's huge. Exactly to your point, Paul, that the rules team and what they've been able to do, making a slight tweak. It wasn't just a nerf, but a balance adjustment through this data slate to the other factions through Armor of Contempt. I mean, that's exactly what we're talking about. The ability to just flip different levers that have different impacts on the game outside of just toning down or adjusting or mediating whatever rule sets may have just been released, but being able to breathe some life into these different factions through simply Armor of Contempt is a perfect example.
Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back. I actually do want to say, mention something about our sponsor. Our sponsor has some amazing deals on some Age of Sigmar sets and the Black Templar box set. So if you're looking to jump into those armies, go check out our sponsor's website. Hear the ad right now. We'll be back in just a couple seconds.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Everybody, we are back. Still got the whole crew here. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for checking out our sponsor. Thanks for leaving us some 5-star reviews. Thanks for buying a t-shirt. What else can we thank people for?
Hit like, subscribe, and share.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for being here. Yeah. Appreciate the active community each and every week, wherever you can find us. So starting Yeah, Adam, you asked a good question in the first segment about like how to get started with a large model. And there's all kind of theories on this about do you like sub-assembly these things? Do you paint it all as one piece? And with a knight, I go back and forth, and I don't want to seem noncommittal, but sometimes I put them all together and just paint it, and sometimes I leave the armor plates off.
Mm.
But I always build the undercarriage first, like the whole skeletal structure, including the arms.
Yeah, that's true. And then so I already own three big knights, three Questorus sized knights, and I'm playing the Imperial side of the street, so I pretty much think I just need like three of the new Armiga boxes, then I can have six Armigas that I can have whichever configuration I want. And then I'm going to probably get some Cerastus because they're just the coolest looking knight models ever. They look so good. I've always wanted a Lancer, so I think that's going to be my treat once I've finished my three big boys and four to six little lads. I'm going to treat myself and get a Lancer. And then that's probably it. That's what I want. I want to do like seven to 10 models for this army, fully magnetized. And then I want to spend like a month building the most baller display base ever that I can think of. Fully designed. That's literally why we talked about what we did last week. Cause I wanted to be like, hey, I'm building up to, it's one thing I've never done in my hobby career life in it. I've never gone all in on a display base. I've always kind of half it for the points. I want a full a display base.
Fun editing this one.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, there goes our family friendly rating. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
Cultural differences. I'll put that one down. Like the most vanilla. Never mind. but yeah, so I've got two houses, two schemes that I'm tossing up, right? One of them is this House Veroni, which I'm sure you guys might be familiar with. It's the green and gold and with spot white. The green and gold because it's the Australian athletic colours, like all our sporting teams wear green and gold as their thing. So it's a bit of Australia about it. And the other one is House Orthac, because that's the house that was most closely allied to the Dark Angels during the Heresy. So they can go with my Heresy army and with my 40K army and it'll look thematically
correct.
But I hear neither of those are forgiving color schemes. Purple especially can come out in a lot of different ways and not be great.
Purple is unforgiving. I say this because like the color, the purple colors, the paints, it's very difficult for me anyway to get a solid. Well, I can get a solid foundation, but then how do you start highlighting it up? And then when does it stop looking like purple?
Yeah, and start looking like pink or start looking like, yeah, something completely different. Yeah,
gray or whatever, you know.
Yeah. What are you guys, any tips on what to use as a base color for purple? Like I've seen some people use black, but then I find it's harder. You need to go higher with the highlights to get the differentiation. Or some people start with a Administratum gray or whatever. Mechanica Standard Gray, spray. But then I find you can wash out the purple a little bit too much.
Personally, I just use purple paint.
keep it simple.
Like Vallejo, I think, has the best purples, personally. Yep. So if you want like a warmer kind of purple, they have one in the game color line called Hexed Lichen that I really, really like. And then if you wanted it more like a blue purple... Oh, what is this one? This is one of my favorite ones. It's also in the game color line, and it's royal purple, and it's like closer to a blue. And both of those cover beautifully. They're very super pigmented, so you don't really have to worry about doing multiple coats on it. Like, usually one is going to be more than enough. Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of, I don't know, I don't have problems with purple, you guys.
Oh, that's good.
I remember first when I first started painting, when I first came back to painting, this was only like 6 or 7 years ago. Purple was like the second hardest color to paint under yellow, or was it third under orange and yellow? But yeah, so you're not finding any issues? What do you guys reckon?
No, I really find, well, when you're starting this project, don't paint the whole thing at once. Like, just start on one of the armor plates. And that way you can mess around, get your scheme right, figure out if you want to have any heraldry involved in each of the armor plates. And you know, do some masking without compromising what you do around the rest of the model.
When you're painting the skeleton on a knight, how much effort do you put into like highlighting? Like, so I'm going to be airbrushing the metallics on the skeleton. Do I bother like putting highlights through the airbrush onto it? Like, you know, the top of a rib or top of a shoulder, or is that just going to take away from the armor panels and the details there?
I think you want to do it because, okay, well, let me tell you how I do it. And then this is, and I'll tell you why I do it. And then you may come to a different conclusion once you go through the process. So I prime the skeleton black.
Yep.
Then I do a very heavy dry brush of Lead Belcher across the whole thing.
Yep.
Then I go back and I dry brush a lighter silver, what is it, Ironbreaker or, you know, one of those
like Storm Fang or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Over a few of the places. Not everything, just a few of the places. I also pick out, and this is before any washes. There's no washes at this point in time. And then I pick out some of the other like bolts or, you know, different places around the legs and the joints and the exhaust pipes or whatever with a different color, like a brass or a gold. If I was doing Imperials, it might be like Retributor armor. If I'm on the Chaos side, it's a brass type color.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want these areas of interest around the big project that kind of end up disappearing when you're looking at the whole thing, when it's done. But as people start to focus in on areas of your night, because it's sitting there on the table for 2 hours while you're playing a game, then those things start to reappear. So I think that it is worth it to put in the extra highlights or touches or painting hoses where you might, you know, oh, I dry brushed over that. It's good. No, going back in and painting and washing the hose, you know, go back in and, you know, highlight where it would be that chrome, like, why am I, what's the word? The thing that compresses in on itself.
The pistons.
The pistons. The struts. Yeah. Whatever. Yes, those things. It's worth it because you might get lost as you're painting it, but then it will reappear as you are, you know,
yeah,
looking at the model forever.
Have you done any, like, crazy basing on your knights or for any big models in general? Like, I know you've done a lot of Beast Claw Raiders, Tanya. How do you guys go about designing a base? So the I don't mind if the model's posed dynamic enough, it doesn't need much on the base, but I want each of these guys to be a project in and of themselves. Like, I want them to have a thematic base with a thematic pose, with a beautiful paint job, with decals. And like, I want each one of these to be like a month's work, you know, because I need to stay busy, right? How do you guys design it from the model down or the base up?
Well, I mean, so I don't have knights, but I have models that are the same size and kind of fulfill the same role as knights. And I almost always finish the model first and then I build the base around it. And I do this for two reasons. The first one is because, especially with something as heavy as a knight or like a mega knob or something like that, I want them to appear as if they've sunken into the ground because they're so heavy.
That's cool.
So that's why I like to build up the base around them. So if I'm using like a texture paint or something like that, I won't be too careful about it. Like, I'll make sure that it kind of like, you know, it looks like the model sinking into the ground. But yeah, I like to build the base up for the model because I don't ever want the base to be the focal point. So I like to get the model done and then add what I want, and then I take usually something off because it's usually too much. I don't want it to take away from the model.
I think if you're going to do that, you're going to build a dynamic base, then you do want to. Your leg positioning is important because you want it to look kind of natural, and that's where I get kind of lazy sometimes because I don't feel like cutting or sawing a leg most of the time.
Yeah.
So if you, and then also I kind of fall into that, I don't want to say like power gamer mentality, but I don't want my model being any taller than it needs to be.
Well, they're knights. Like, you know, it's pretty hard to hide the buggers anyway, isn't it?
Hey man, you know, that's why you don't want to be any taller than you have to be.
No carapace weapons. No.
And I'm just being practical.
If you build it afterwards, then you're not adding any extra height.
Yeah. So you got two choices there. Either if you want like stuff to come off of the base or whatever, you know, and you want your knight to be having his leg resting on it or whatever, you've got, you know, with that in mind, you've got to adjust it in some way. Mm. So I, you know, doing that planning as a beginning thought instead of an afterthought, that's the only advice I'm trying to give there.
Yeah. So I think that, and I'm with Paul, especially it was talking about planning. You know, I think especially because there is so much of art in this, there's something to be said about the Leonardo da Vinci approach of just like, you know, how many paintings are under Leonardo da Vinci's like masterpiece works, right? And how many and many painters are like that. And so there is something to, I know it when I see it, but there's also something to having a plan and going into it with that and trying to fulfill something of a vision, right? And so in a lot of these cases, when you're talking about something that's going to take so much effort, and it's also not like this is resource, it's not cheap, and that's in time, resources, and just support and effort. And so with that, I do think there is something to really coming to, you know, this is what I think I want right now. This is what I think I want to do. And whether, you know, not everybody can necessarily sketch that out, and that's okay. Sometimes it's just having a picture of something. Take like there's tons of 40K artwork that you can have that you can look at and say, you know, I want something like this, but maybe in my color scheme of the army, or just random video game backgrounds for what have you, right? And you're just talking about, and this is where some of those more complex display boards can come into play, because you want it to have some architecture in there, you want it to have some background themes to it and whatnot, and then you start thinking about the bases. But that's really because when you're talking about a really full-blown display board, you're putting the models into a scene to a certain degree. And so having that vision and that plan, I think, is a crucial part to this and how you go about that, because you know where you're starting from, you know what you have. And in some cases, it could be that you have a lot of your models already ready to go. They're just maybe not based in that direction or something like that. And so trying to figure out exactly where you're starting from and what you're trying to get to, and then what that looks like in between there. And, you know, there's also the part of like when you need to have it ready by, and that adds its own pressure. Sometimes that's more motivating for many of us because you only have so much time. Whereas, you know, if you just say, well, I'll do it when I do it, then you have all the time in the world, right? And so just a lot of things to think about going into it.
Yeah. So I think one of the big driving forces behind wanting to do this army is that I've already decided I'm playing nothing but Dark Angels competitively for the remainder of this ITC season. So literally until the end of January, I'm only dedicated to playing Dark Angels. So that's why I want this project, because I have no impetus to get it done for games for XYZ date. It's just me, my brain, and the models, you know, and I can let each piece, each model take as long as it takes. Mm-hmm. And I find that extremely liberating. For so long, I've just been nose to the grind, get this model done because I want to play it at this event. And I've used that to get massive armor. Is done. I've got like 11,000, 12,000 points of painted Cadians because I did it unit by unit because I wanted to play them at X event next month or the month after that or whatever. And so I'm trying to flip that script kind of for the first time in a long time, and just there's no time limits. I can design these things, take as much time as I want on each of these things. And I want Knights to be my next ITC season. So the only deadline is February 2023, essentially.
Oh, don't say that. You'll be like trying to mass scramble by January 31st. You're like, we'll be having this conversation again. So what would you say when you were talking about like basing those
knights? There's no, but they're not getting any bases. They're just going to stand on their own 2 feet on the table, because bases take time, and time is not what I have. Yeah. Basing is a privilege, people.
Yep. So anyway, paint the base coat the skeletal structure, your choice, because when it starts to get, you know, sub-assembly or whatever, sometimes it feels like the pieces are too fiddly, and then it's just like, is it even worth the trouble of trying to hold, you know, pinch this little thing in my finger and then paint it separately or whatever? But with the knight, the pieces are a little bit bigger. It seems to be a little bit more comfortable to even attempt this without getting too frustrated.
Best tip, I really love what you said about just getting one armor panel and just like one shoulder piece or whatever, or a leg guard or whatever, and just having a play, like seeing what combination of colors work for you. And then like, if you do stuff it up, cool, you got one panel to strip. Doesn't matter. Let's like strip it down, go again. Cause then I'm just going to go out like a kid in a candy store and just buy a bunch of purples or greens if I decide to go with Veroni, and just see which ones I like best, which combination of colors. And yeah, I could just take like that. I see, that's something I find I've never had the time to do. I've never given myself the chance to just be like, you know what, I'm going to take a weekend and just find a purple recipe. That's the only job I have this weekend, is to get a purple recipe done. In weekends gone by, I've been like, this whole unit of intercessors, all 10 of them, need to be done. I'm starting at Friday at 5:30 when I knock off work, and they need to be done by Sunday before I go to bed. You know, that's been jobs for me in the past. So, like, I find that very exciting.
Well, with purple or any color, you know, don't necessarily, you know, look for how to paint a purple knight. You know, look for how to paint purple and then apply that to your knight. Like, you either find the color or the model, and you rarely find both, but finding a technique that works for you for the color you want, I highly suggest that. And you have an airbrush, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, so if you wanted to put any like chevrons or stripes or whatever on your model, it's a good time to practice.
Spot on.
Yeah, masking is, everyone, when you look at the masking tutorials, it seems to work right for everyone every single time. But let me tell you, in practical reality, that is not how it works.
100%.
You got to figure out, there's like a combination of how much sticky, how long you've let the base coats dry. If you put any sealer on them, most people don't, how long they've dried, the humidity in your area, how much stickiness is on the tape, how wet you apply the paint to the area you have masked. There is like, I don't know, trigonometry, like probably get people to the moon easier than we could explain. You know how, you know, the humidity versus paint versus your heavy finger on the airbrush trigger, you know, there's all these things, this math has to go into the fact that it's just, it ain't easy to figure out, but you've got to figure out, you know, what right work works for you. But when you do figure it out, you unlock a whole new skill and it looks cool on knights.
Exactly right. And knights are one of those clean canvas armies that you can just go absolutely bananas. I'm planning to use, if I go with this, I'm leaning towards the purple personally from House Orlak, or is Orthak. I got to look it up. I can't remember. Because I haven't painted purple on an army before. I've done green, like I said, I've done Cadians. I've never painted purple on large scale before. And also I feel I've got Custodes transfers from Forge World, and I feel like that's going to look gorgeous. So I'm going to use that transfer sheet sparingly on them, because I feel like if I use too many, it's just going to look like Empress Children.
Oh yeah, because all the gold filigree and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So sparingly, with possibly heavy weathering on it. But yeah, enough about me. We can talk about other people's large models.
Well, going into Sigmar, that's a whole nother thing, because they typically don't have armor plates. They have fur and pouches and even more buckles and belts.
They do, yeah. I think that the way that you approach it is usually pretty similar, though. No?
I'm going to unpack it for us a little bit.
Okay, well, I mean, so like, I got this big model, and so I'm just like looking at my Thunder Tusk on the shelf, which is like a big mammoth thing if you're not into Age of Sigmar, and a
treasure trove of bits.
Yes. So I pick it up and I look at it. I'm like, okay, well, what is like the main meat of this model, right? And that is the mammoth. Okay, well, what color am I going to paint that? Okay, so I decided to paint mine blue because, you know, they're icy and they like to spit snow at people. Age of Sigmar's a trip, y'all. And so then, okay, so I'm going to paint them blue. So I pick a darker shade than I want it to actually track at the end. And that's my base coat. And then I don't paint with an airbrush. So, well, then I pick my mid-tone and, you know, do highlights on top, and then I start to pick out like the next biggest area. Of course, I kind of look at it like when I paint models, no matter what the size they are, I look at them like they're a topographic model. So I start with like the valleys, and then I paint the like the mountain peaks last. So in most cases, that's going to be like wherever the skin is. If I was looking at a marine, it would be like the body glove part might be the area that I do first, or the armor plates. If I'm looking at a knight, it would definitely be like the skeleton, like the underbit. So, but yeah, I think it's like, I just sort of approach it the same. Like if I can, I will spray a base coat if the model is like one color in particular. So when I did my big stompy robots, I sprayed them in a silver. So I sprayed them silver and then I just dunked them in Nuln oil. And then dry brushed them and edge highlighted the sort of like metallic bits on the inside and then picked out all the details. And I think that's the trick, is I wouldn't worry too much about the, what would you call it? Like the skeleton of the knight? Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about like going too much in like maybe Zenithal it or whatever you're going to do with your airbrush, you airbrush folks. Yep. And then I would really spend the time on like the armor plates, any sort of lenses, if there's like plasma effects, anything like that. That's where I would spend the time. I wouldn't spend the time on like the metallic skeleton-y bits. People aren't looking at that.
Dang.
I mean, the other thing is that you just paint it all very like monochromatic, and then you would want to paint that the sort of skeleton bits more in depth, right? Because then there's not any one bit that's going to be drawing the eye, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was kind of what I was asking before. Do I want to put a lot of effort into the skeleton, because it might just detract from the beautiful armor and armor plates and that stuff.
I don't think you want to go too nuts, but you definitely want to put some, you want to have some contrasting elements on there.
So I've been using, I've really enjoyed, one of the things I've loved the most about the last couple of armies I've done is experimenting with glazing on metallics to give them different feels. Like, you know, I've used Druci Violet as a glaze to kind of warm up a gold to make it a bit more warm and a bit more interesting. I've been using it right now on all my Dark Angels. I've been using... I've either been mixing up my own green glaze or yellow glaze, yellow and green together, not together, one layer than the other. Or I've just been doing a heavy-ish green glaze to kind of age metallics. I like the idea of Spot doing that on bits and pieces of a knight to add a bit of interest. And that, it takes like 10 minutes. It'll take like 10 minutes to do the whole skeleton in bits and places. Is that something that's applicable to knights, or should I not bother?
For me, I think it is kind of cool. So on mine, there are little metallic bits that I've painted with Bluke. So these things are for my orcs, and my orcs are Death Skulls. So I did put some like blue metallic bits on it. And I do think that it adds interest without putting that much effort in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you can give like a subtle, almost like glow to it too. So if you if you have plasma weaponry or something like that on your knight, and you want to make it look like the reactor coils on its back or whatever have some of the similar, use some of those same effects, and you get kind of some unifying elements from one side of the model to the other. Because this is a big model. Like this is not necessarily a topic of how to paint a model. Everyone knows how to paint a space marine or whatever. This is about how to this is 10 times the size of those things, and you have to treat them a little bit differently. You would expect different things from them to look interesting from all sides, because people won't be seeing the whole thing at one time.
I might be a little controversial here, but whenever I put a big model on the table, most people are all like, wow, that's a big model, that's really cool, and they don't look anywhere near as hard at the paint job as they do at like a tiny little space marine.
That can't be true.
For me, yeah, I don't find people look at like my paint jobs, which is probably a good thing. Like on my Morganaut, my Gorkonaut, my Space Wolf Flyer, like they just, I don't know, they just see a big model. It's painted pretty clean. That thing is cool.
I mean, it's certainly the spectacle of it, the size of it kind of speaks for itself a bit in some cases, but I don't know. I think that taking the extra time, it will pay off in this game or the next.
Yeah.
It will absolutely pay off. But like where to start the project, you know, try not to irritate yourself. Find something that you can work with and that you will complete, and then you will replicate, and you want to do a whole army of it. That's it. Finding a process that works for you.
Follow your heart and don't overthink it.
And then don't give yourself a year to work on it, because then you won't.
You'll never get it done.
Yeah. like, you know, with this Chaos Knights, I've actually got these knights, and I'm actually going to play them as Chaos or Imperial I did a color scheme that was intentionally somewhat ambiguous, but I found something that looks good to me that I can easily replicate. So I was able to get, you know, 7 Armiger Helverin War Dogs done and the Abominant in about a week and a half.
Jeez, that's pretty good.
But it's mostly a product. It's mostly a process. And that's what got me through, not because a particular, you know, any talent or an overabundance of spare time, but it came down to something that I could do and replicate, and I liked the outcome. But that's where I said I kind of went back and forth. Sometimes I was like, oh well, today I'm not irritated by using subassemblies. Today I am irritated by subassemblies, and this will be glued on the model, so I don't have to hold it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, the trick, you know, with painting is, you know, of course you want to enjoy the outcome and like it, but sometimes it's just, you know, we also have the practicalness of needing our models on the table by certain times to achieve, you know, either to get our battle ready or to not embarrass ourselves in front of our friends at the next tournament or whatever. Yeah. This other aspect of it. So I want to make sure we address the whole bit of it.
Yeah, because there's always different factors. I think, like, I don't really think I care about this army getting good paint scores. I mean, that I'd be very happy to get good hobby scores with it, but it's more for me. It's more for me, like, my enjoyment of the process. I just want to sit back and just, I don't know, learn some new things. I really want to get better at doing transfers. I want to level up with my airbrush, like, base coating game. Sure. And I really want to just see what I can create with, like, a cool display board.
Try
like,
to put when some given,
Oh, 100%. I'm going to be striping. I'm going to be chevroning. I'm going to be using transfers. I'm going to be pin washing. I'm going to be, yeah, it's going to be cool.
The pin washing is it actually lends itself to the larger models, I think, a little bit easier sometimes because you have broader surfaces to clean your mess up.
That's true. Yep, that's absolutely right. It's very easy to see as well. And plus, any streaking or weathering you is just exponentially good. More impactful. Good. Yeah.
When you're going back in with the sponges and that kind of stuff, it's a slightly more forgiving, even though you're working with, you know, what is could be a larger, intimidated, more expensive model.
Mm. Well, yeah, exactly right. And you're always loath to mess up. What is over here is a very expensive model. Like,
yeah, it's no joke. It's like, I don't want, like, this thing is one, it took me forever to build. You know, like all these things, you kind of talk yourself out and trick yourself into worrying about it more than you should.
Yep.
So I think that's why it's cool to talk these things out like this.
Yeah, it's a nearly $200 model in Australian dollar redos, and you just don't want to go stuffing it about too much.
Yeah, but you will be fine. And like, I mean, Tanya's right as far as people don't pay super much attention to the skeleton or whatever, but you definitely want to go back and pick out some, whether it's like, there's, you'll see the on the legs, like the top, the joints in the legs, you know, there's a bolt that holds, you know, looks like a bolt that holds them together, and then, you know, another inch or two down the leg there's another bolt that looks similar, you know, mm-hmm. pick those out with a different color.
Yeah,
but I would suggest maybe assembling it first, because nothing is more annoying than putting in the time to do those details and then you inadvertently like cover it up with an armor plate and you're like, ah.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my suggestion.
Good point on that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. You spent so much detail. You got 3 layers on this nut and then, oh, so that's where this is the part that attaches the armor plate to.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's where the chest plate goes. Oh, well.
You run into less of that. On the night, because like there'll be flat places where they go, but there is a place on the chest that you could do that, because the chest one, the actual, like the chest grating, that's the piece, the armor plate that's right under the head. You could easily put that thing on upside down.
Yeah. It's a weird shape, isn't it?
It is a bit of a weird shape. So it's functional. You could put it upside down. And so you could have like a couple of little nibs exposed that you could spend time painting that, you know, once you realize that you should flip the thing over.
Flip the table. so mad.
Has anybody painted any of the new Greater Demons? I painted one of the new Scar brands when they came out for a mate, and I actually had a lot of fun doing that one. I've heard the Lord of Change is a really good time too to paint.
I do not have a Lord of Change, but I do have a Great Unclean one and a Keeper of Secrets.
See, they... they bring Daypro's different, a lot of different issues. A lot of different technique where, you know, you don't have an undercarriage, you don't really have, and even with things like Beastclaw Raiders, when you have like a howdah and like straps and leather bits, you know, crisscrossing all the way along, like especially with the Great Unclean one, yeah, it's like a base coat that's broken up constantly, right, with little pustules and pox and wounds and all these other bits.
I did a lot of research on like how to make interesting looking like fat. If you were to slice into to fat, you know, because it's got all these open wounds and like stuff, so you really do have to. And then I painted, so my recipe for Nurgle, I mean, it's a Thonian camo shade. You know, you don't have to spend too much. You know, twist my arm and give me talk about a Thonian camo shade. But if you're painting with a wash as your one of your base coats, you got to be super careful because it's very difficult to clean up your mistakes after that. So, like, it goes back to like contrast and stuff. So, you know, just I find it sometimes it's a time saver. But then if you have just a lapse of concentration, take you off the prize, you screw up, you stop, you don't apply it across the whole model. You have to stop. You know, there's all these perils in there. So it may seem like a real time saver, but you still got to pay attention to what you're doing.
Well, because it's a different set of problems. Well, a different set of techniques on the greater demons and things of their ilk, because especially the Great Unclean one's probably the best example. Because then it's not as important to get that beautiful solid base coat. It's actually the details in between the base coat portions that is really what's going to catch the eye and going to cause the points of interest. Yeah, exactly right. So you got to execute the big stuff fine, but doesn't need to be exceptional, like, which I think of kind of needs to be on, especially Imperial Knights, where you don't have any spikes or, you know, birds to break up the flat panels. You really need to execute that base coat really, really well.
Yeah. There's a couple of little parts on the Knight Carapace too, like the hatch has, yep, you know, like a handle on it. And if you're new to masking, you might not want to put the handle on it because it will interfere with your tape.
Yeah. That's a good point.
So I'm just saying these things as they occur to me. Got me thinking now. I jumped in there and I apologize.
Nah, it's totally fine. And the same can be true for probably at least the Bloodthirster. And the Keeper's weird. Yeah. The Keeper has so much exposed smooth skin. You do need the base coat. And I suppose the layering of your highlights to be on point, because you want to get all the smooth muscles and all that stuff, you know, well shaded, well represented.
That's it. Well, look, that's our show for this week. I know this has been a large model. I don't think we've actually taught anybody anything. More of just outlined the potential pitfalls.
So you've taught me to come to terms with what I want to do with the skeleton, and that to just take one armor panel and put it through all its paces. Just take one armor panel and just go to town, try everything on it. I think that's the tip that I'm going to take away from this the most. That and the set my expectations for the skeleton. Like either go all the way with it or don't bother. Don't.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even if we give a, you know, some guide rails of what not to do, you know, people can narrow down what they should do. Maybe
find your own truth. Yeah, buddy.
Well, that's it. Well, with these things, you know, it goes back to kind of finding something that works for you, and then using the experience of others to get your projects on the table, and then eventually out to play, which is, you know, what we all want. So more time to play. And speaking of more time to play, I'm going to be in San Diego here in a couple of weeks for the U.S. Open Series there. Hopefully see a bunch of folks there. I'm going to eat some tacos in the city.
Nice.
Yep. There's a YouTuber I follow that apparently has like some restaurants in the area. So I'm going to try to check those out. One of the things you know, do at cities like this.
I really look forward to like your little lives that you do when you eat stuff. I can live vicariously through you.
I enjoy them quite a lot.
Mm-hmm. I will try to do that. If I can get out to the place I want to go, there's three places right in like the same area. It's the same guy who owns three different restaurants. I'm going to try to hop in between them if I get some time out. I'm not sure. Well, folks, yeah, thanks for joining us. And we will be back next week. Links in the show notes for all the stuff we talked about. Good night, everybody.
See ya.
Scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.